is Monday, November 9th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Saturday, VOA projected former Vice President Joe Biden as the winner in the 2020 presidential election. So, what's next for the president-elect?
Today, they are concentrating on the coronavirus.
Plus, reaction from the White House.
Well, the campaign has made a pretty broad public relations exercise.
And a beloved icon passes. We'll have these stories and more next. Former U.S. Vice President Joe Biden was projected to be the winner of the U.S. presidential election on Saturday after gaining an insurmountable lead in Pennsylvania's vote count, followed by another projected win in Nevada. He stands to be inaugurated on January 20th, 2021. President-elect Biden has been a prominent figure in Washington's political circles for nearly half a century. VOA's Mike Sullivan looks at the career of a veteran politician who had his biggest political win 4 years after leaving office as vice president.
The election came down to a few states, including the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, where the separation in the vote was razor thin. The sitting president and his supporters claim there were vote irregularities, which they say may reverse the current results. But after American news networks projected Democrat Joe Biden had an insurmountable lead, he declared victory and sought to bridge the country's political divisions.
For all those of you who voted for President Trump, I understand the disappointment tonight. I've lost a couple times myself, but now let's give each other a chance.
During the election campaign, President Trump emphasized social unrest and law and order, while Biden criticized Trump for his handling of the COVID-19 pandemic. President Trump trailed in the polls throughout. He mounted high-energy rallies in states such as Michigan and Wisconsin, where voters were seen as divided. For 8 years, Biden was Barack Obama's vice president and played a major role in his administration. In contrast to President Trump, a political newcomer when elected in 2016, Biden is an experienced politician, a fact he hammered home on the campaign trail.
I'm going to say something outrageous. I know how to make government work.
Yeah! First elected to the Senate at age 29, Biden has held elected office for almost 50 years. Assuming current returns will be certified, at 78, he will be the oldest person sworn in as U.S. president.
He is bland, and the blandness normally would hurt him more than it does against Donald Trump. It actually gives people a very sharp, distinct choice.
Biden was chosen as the Democratic Party candidate after beating more liberal presidential contenders in primaries. One was the person who will be his vice president, Kamala Harris. With Biden doing little in-person campaigning because of coronavirus pandemic concerns, the campaign was ultimately about the sitting president. In a public appearance in the swing state of Pennsylvania, Biden spoke the day before the November 3rd election.
Tomorrow we can put an end to a presidency that has failed to protect the nation. Tomorrow we can put an end to a presidency that has fanned the flames of hate across this nation.
Also the day before the election, Trump expressed confidence in Wisconsin.
Remember what I said 4 years ago? I am your voice, and we will all together make America great again. That's what we're doing. That's what we've done.
Voters turned out in unprecedented numbers for a U.S. election, as high as 90% of eligible voters. The narrowness of the victory shows how divided the U.S. electorate is. Legal challenges mean that the election could ultimately be decided in court. The difficult task ahead, to unify a divided country. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
VOA's Carolyn Pursuti is in Wilmington, Delaware with the president-elect. She joined me on the phone to share what's next for Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris.
Today, they are concentrating on the coronavirus. We will have a briefing today from President-elect Biden. He will introduce his newly formed COVID advisory board, and that consists of about 12 people, science-based. The head of it, actually, it's a three-prong head. There are three co-chairs of this organization. The lead is the former Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy. He was fired during the Trump administration. Also, we have former FDA Commissioner, Dr. David Kessler, and then Yale University's Dr. Marcella Nunez-Smith. So they will get a briefing from them today. They being President-elect Biden and Vice President-elect Harris will get a briefing from this advisory board today. The Vice President-elect will make comments on COVID-19 and the economy today. And of course, he's expected to comment on the Pfizer results. The drug company Pfizer is announcing that their vaccine is 90% effective against COVID. There are four vaccine trials in the United States. Pfizer is the first to make any announcement about their vaccines. Biden put out a statement earlier today, and he said the end of the battle against COVID-19 is still months away. And then he also warned Americans this will be many months before we have a widespread vaccine for the entire American public. But he said this is wonderful news from Pfizer.
Now, Carolyn, the inauguration for Joe Biden isn't until January 20th of next year. Besides what has been announced about what they're undertaking today, has the Biden campaign announced anything about their plans for transition?
No, but they have started a transition webpage. So they have that live and upgoing. He's also talked about working on various other issues. He wants to get back in the Paris Climate Accord immediately. He wants to rescind the Muslim travel ban. Of course, a lot of this depends on how things shake out in the Senate. The Senate was run by Republicans, so how much a new president can get through remains to be determined.
Carolyn, really quickly now, I want to go back to last weekend. On Saturday evening, Vice President-elect Kamala Harris and President-elect Joe Biden gave speeches. You were there. But what I want to ask you about really is how do they spend their Sunday?
Sunday morning, the president-elect went to church at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. He went to Mass. And then following that, he went to the cemetery where his son, Beau Biden, is buried. And he bowed his head at the gravesite. Beau Biden died as an adult while Joe Biden was vice president of this country. Then they went home and basically had a family day because they knew that today would be the day that they need to hit the ground running. And they will start work on the transition. They will definitely start work with this new coronavirus task force immediately.
That was VOA's Carolyn Pursuti. U.S. President Donald Trump has not conceded the 2020 presidential election thus far. Steve Herman is VOA's White House bureau chief, and I asked him how the president and his campaign plan to move forward.
Well, the campaign has made a pretty broad public relations exercise in challenging the vote. They have not had much success in court so far, and according to most legal experts, they're very skeptical that any move by the Trump campaign is going to end up halting certification for any period of time or reverse any significant number of votes that is going to not result in Joe Biden becoming president of the United States on January 20th. There is a new legal challenge in Pennsylvania. There have been previous ones by the campaign there. It remains to be seen what happens with that. But officials in that state say they see this all as delaying tactics, and the margin of victory for Biden in the vote counting so far is really insurmountable. And even if the ballots that are being challenged by the Trump campaign were set aside, it appears that it still would not affect the outcome.
Steve, the Biden campaign has launched its transition team website. And even though the Trump campaign is challenging some of the votes and there will be some recounts in the coming days, has the Trump campaign relayed to you through the Office of the Press Secretary any discussions about a transition team?
No, there's a big technical hindrance at the moment. A director of one of the government agencies known as the General Services Administration needs to sign off on some paperwork that would release federal funds and office space for the Biden transition team. That has not occurred yet. We don't know exactly why. The Biden transition team has been launched by the Biden-Harris campaign. They are indeed moving ahead, we're waiting for some sort of acknowledgement of this from the White House. Will that come today, or could it be delayed further as the president pursues his legal strategy and overtly does not recognize Joe Biden as the president-elect? Now, again, the president does not need to concede. It doesn't work that way in our system.
That was VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman. Now, the race to control Congress has still yet to be decided, and VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson gave me the latest on that race.
So even though we still have some results from House races still to come in, they're still counting those votes. What we do know starting this week is that Democrats will hold their House majority, even though they didn't gain as many seats as they wanted to going into this election. That, of course, has raised questions about the leadership of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who is expected to run for the speakership again when the new Congress comes in January. I've seen this before. There's always a lot of discussion about whether Pelosi will be able to assume leadership once again and get control of her caucus. Usually, almost always, she comes through. But I think there's a lot more discussion now about where the Democratic Party is headed and the conflict between progressives and centrists. That's a really interesting discussion to take a look at moving forward.
That's the House. The Senate races are still yet to be decided as well. Currently, VOA projects that both the Republicans and the Democrats will have 48 seats apiece. What can you tell us about these final four races that are still underway?
That's right. So the two biggest races that we're looking at are actually both in the same state. The state of Georgia, which appears to have flipped and gone blue for President-elect Joe Biden. Those two Senate races are going to be absolutely key in determining the makeup of the U.S. Senate next year. And there is going to be an enormous amount of money, media attention, people on the ground organizing. All of the political will that went into this election in November is now going to be directed in force at the state of Georgia to fight for control of the U.S. Senate. And we won't have a result there until January 5th of 2021, just before that new Congress is sworn in. Expect to see a lot of discussion about that. And of course, votes are still being counted in two other states as well that could give Democrats the majority or cement Republicans in there. So that's going to be something to watch over the next few weeks into the next year.
So, Catherine, really quickly, what happens if the Democrats and the Republicans split those last four elections and both parties wind up with 50 senators apiece? Who has the majority control then?
So because it's President-elect Joe Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris, that means that if there is a tie, Vice President-elect Kamala Harris is that tie-breaking vote in the U.S. Senate. That's why another reason why it was so important for Democrats to win the White House. That's something that we've seen come down to some very close votes in the U.S. Senate in these past few years. The presence of Harris in that role could be incredibly important.
Catherine Gibson is VOA's congressional correspondent. And coming up later,
Trebek, who hosted more than 7,000 episodes of Jeopardy, was known for engaging contestants with straight-faced but witty banter and for his scholarly demeanor.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers say it's more difficult to fully observe the cosmos due to a problem called light pollution. Light pollution is the illumination of the night sky from artificial lighting like streetlights. A new study from a team of scientists led by the GFZ German Research Center for Geosciences suggests that streetlights may not be as much of a contributor to light pollution than thought. The scientists conducted an experiment with Tucson, Arizona, which utilizes so-called smart streetlights that can dim or brighten on command. For the experiment, Tucson officials would raise or lower their city's streetlights each night for several days and then maintain their normal brightness for 2 days after. The city was imaged each night by a satellite. The scientists found that only 20% of the imaged light came from the streetlights. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Nearly 100 people have died in South Korea after receiving a seasonal flu shot. Although the Korea Disease Control and Prevention Agency has not made a link between the vaccine and the deaths, there is some public concern about the flu vaccine safety. Earlier today, via KakaoTalk, I spoke with reporter Jay Kwok in Seoul to learn more.
So up to late last week, which is the last time they've briefed the press on this, still no definitive link has been made to the vaccination and these deaths. So one remains under investigation, but most of these deaths were from people over 70 with pre-existing medical conditions like diabetes or chronic renal failure. And about half of them have undergone an autopsy, and some of them have been found, to have died from things like brain hemorrhage or cardiac arrest. So still no significant link to the vaccination itself.
Now, has this incident affected in any way the rate of utilization of the flu vaccine in South Korea?
It remains to be seen, but the experts are saying that resistance to vaccine in South Korea is some of the lowest in the world. So at the moment, people are still going to the clinics to get vaccinated against flus. People are following the rules, they're following the government recommendations, because following a pretty excellent handling of the COVID-19 epidemic, the government agency for disease control has gained a lot of public trust. So at the moment, it seems unaffected. I see some Twitter chatter against vaccination, some suspicions, some rumor mill. But at the moment, there is no evidence to say that the rate is lower than last year.
Jay, you mentioned that there is no evidence thus far of a correlation between the deaths and the flu vaccine. With a forthcoming COVID-19 vaccine currently in development, are authorities in South Korea worried that the deaths may impact that utilization?
At the moment, it's very hard to tell, but the government has been warning the citizens from early on, maybe, back from September, that if we don't get vaccinated with the flu shots, then there will be what they call a twindemic of flu and COVID-19. So at the moment, the public in South Korea is very cognizant of the necessity of vaccines. So again, very little evidence that there will be general hesitancy against the COVID-19 vaccine once they're available.
That was Jay Kwok speaking to me via KakaoTalk from Seoul, South Korea. The United States is set to surpass 10 million COVID-19 cases Monday as the country deals with a surge in infections worse than at any other point in the global pandemic. During the past week, the United States has added an average of more than 100,000 new cases per day, double its daily infection growth from a month ago. About 900 people are dying each day. Globally, the number of confirmed cases is more than 50 million, with 1.2 million deaths and 33 million people recovered. A new report by Human Rights Watch and Harvard's Human Rights Clinic has documented the use of incendiary weapons and their human cost on civilians over the past decade in conflict zones like Afghanistan, the Gaza Strip, and Syria. The report says that the weapons, which can include white phosphorus, inflict excruciating burns, sometimes to the bone. The report released on Monday details the immediate and long-term effects of such weapons and urges countries to take concrete action at next year's conference on the Convention of Conventional Weapons to condemn and continue to raise awareness about the use and harm of such weapons. The United Nations opened talks on Libya's future in Tunisia on Monday, aimed at ending nearly a decade of chaos and bloodshed by arranging elections. But obstacles remain despite progress in cementing last month's ceasefire. The UN selected 75 delegates from Libya to take part in the six-day forum. Libya has been split since 2014 between rival factions in the West, held by the internationally recognized Government of National Accord, and in the East, home to Khalifa Haftar's Libyan National Army. Previous diplomatic initiatives to end the conflict have repeatedly collapsed. In the United States, Jeopardy game show host Alex Trebek died on Sunday. His passing was mourned by fans who called him a brainy quizmaster and a nightly source of information and sheer joy. Reuters' Lisa Bernhard remembers the trivia icon.
Trebek, who in March of 2019 revealed his diagnosis of stage 4 pancreatic cancer, passed away peacefully at home surrounded by family and friends, according to the show's Twitter account. The Canadian-born host instilled a love for trivia for millions around the world, said Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who hailed Trebek as an icon. 20 years after Jeopardy first aired in 1964, Trebek became the face of the show and turned it into a ratings powerhouse. It has consistently drawn more than 20 million viewers a week in the United States and Canada, making it the most watched quiz show in those markets. Trebek, who hosted more than 7,000 episodes of Jeopardy, was known for engaging contestants with straight-faced but witty banter and for his scholarly demeanor. He won 6 Emmy Awards for Outstanding Game Show Host, most recently in 2019, and also received a Lifetime Achievement Emmy in 2011.
Lisa Bernhard reports for Reuters News. Now, according to the show's website, Alex Trebek was in the studio up and through October 29th of this year, meaning that shows that he hosted, according to Jeopardy, will air on television through December 25th. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to stay up to date with news and world events by visiting our website 24 hours a day. Just point your web browser on your phone or tablet or even your desktop computer or any other device to voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and good night.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has brokered a peace agreement between Sudan and Israel, the third such agreement between Israel and a Muslim-majority nation in less than 3 months. Israel and Sudan have agreed to normalize their relations. The two countries will begin negotiations on cooperation agreements in agriculture, economy, trade, aviation, migration issues, and other areas of mutual benefit. This historic peace accord follows similar agreements between Israel and the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain. The expansion of the Abraham Accords to include Sudan is a significant step that will create opportunities for Sudan and Israel to improve the lives of their people while enhancing both countries' security. Indeed, for decades, Sudan was in a state of war with Israel and boycotted Israeli goods. After the Six-Day War in 1967, the Arab League met in Khartoum, where they issued what became known as the Declaration of the Three No's. No peace, no recognition, no negotiations. That has all changed, as senior advisor to the president, Jared Kushner, noted.
We have peace. We have the three yeses under President Trump. We have peace, we have recognition, and we have negotiation for even more peace.
After decades of living under a brutal Islamist dictatorship that supported terrorism, the people of Sudan have a new government with new policies, said President Trump.
The Sudanese transitional government has demonstrated its commitment to combating terrorism, creating market economy, and developing the democratic institution that is becoming today's deal, builds on those commitments and marks a pivotal turning point in Sudan's history.
The U.S. welcomes this important progress and stands ready to support the people of Sudan as they work to build a better future for themselves and future generations. Thanks to the three new peace agreements, the Middle East and Africa are experiencing a significant geopolitical transformation. As more countries normalize relations with Israel, the region will become more stable, secure, and prosperous. The United States will continue to stand with the people of the region as they work to build a brighter and more hopeful future.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.